So they don't have that perspective, the perspective that I've learned through CAGP about that the charities want to know, like, who's leaving what in their will, and they want to hear the stories while that person's alive and why this is important to them. I have to convince my clients that they should reach out to the charities that they're leaving tens of thousands of dollars to, because they go, well, why?
You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
In previous podcast episodes, I am sure you've heard us touch on legacies and talk about legacies from a fundraiser point of view and from an emotional and philosophical point of view. And I wanted to delve a little bit deeper into that today. And so I've reached out to my new friend, Betty Ann Howard. And Betty Ann is a financial planner, but she is so much more than that. She is a world-class speaker. She has a book. And the way that she approaches financial planning is really, really interesting from a fundraising point of view, because she actually advises people on how to give after they die. She talks about inheritance. She talks about their philanthropic goals. And so I asked Betty Ann to come onto the podcast today to tell us a little bit more about that. How are you, Betty Ann?
I am doing great, Simon. Thanks. And I love talking to you. It's just so much fun.
Do you? Yeah, well, the secret behind the scenes of this podcast is we get caught up in conversation before I've even pressed record. And that's, hopefully we didn't use up all our good material before we started.
I'm sure we could revisit it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're an interesting one, Betty Ann, because when I think of financial planners, I think of, you know, maybe a little bit stiff. The word I said to you previously was sometimes you think of them a bit heartless because they're coming at it from a very technical point of view. But at the same time, there seems to be a bit of heart in what you're doing, because I'm guessing because you have a social work background.
That's right. I grew up poor. I'm familiar with what it feels like to not be privileged, I've had other personal experiences where my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 60 and she died at 64. So I want to support resources going to coaching, cancer coaching. I look at the ways in which different charities and organizations have made a difference in my life. And now that I have a successful business, I want to be able to give back. And I think, yes, that the social work background probably helps. Mm. It's a reflection of my wanting to make a difference in people's lives, and now it's I want to make a difference in the world. And I feel like as financial advisors, we're in an ideal position to be able to do that. And yet there's a big gap there. Not many financial advisors are actually embracing this for a variety of reasons.
Which is strange, because I mean, it's not a unique thing that people want to make a difference. Everyone wants to have a positive impact on the world. You know, even people who sometimes seem like they don't. I imagine everyone wants to change the world. And so it seems like a pretty obvious conversation that financial planners should be having about not just to get your money to your children or how to, you know, deal with insurance and things like that, but how can you have the biggest impact in that final gift?
Yes. And I think, you know, Simon, years ago, so I've been in financial services for over 20 years. And years ago, before I joined the Canadian Association of Gift Planners, years ago, if somebody said to me, do I talk about philanthropy and charitable giving and all of that with my clients, I would have said, yes, I do. And I've had exposure to so many people in the plan giving and fundraising domain where I have just learned so much. And I've learned what it truly means to have a meaningful conversation with somebody about charitable giving and about philanthropy. So it's not, lots of financial advisors is kind of a one-off conversation where they say, oh, have you ever thought about this? No, I haven't. Oh, do you want to think about it? Well, you know, if there's any hesitation or uncertainty, then it tends to get dropped. Mm-hmm. Whereas for me, I like to talk to people about who and what has made a difference in your life? And is this something that you want to be thinking about in terms of your legacy and either what both what you want to do now and what you might like to do at your death? And similarly, as you mentioned, when it comes to people coming into inheritances, I want to know the story behind where this money came from, with my client's permission, of course, because it can be very emotional. So the number of people who've come into inheritances, and if part of the story is that their parent or their grandparent were charitable and it was their desire to make a difference in the world, then that opens up the conversation to talk about it with them as well. Do they want to have that legacy continue? So I think that my philosophy is it's to have meaningful conversations. It's a process. You have to open up the doors. You have to be intensely curious to get a sense of what's important to people, and then to be able to provide some options about, have you thought about this or have you thought about that? And most of those options people haven't thought about.
And that seems to be a theme in some of your writings and your talks, is you talk a lot about asking questions, you know, almost like a skill that you've brought in from your social work days. And obviously a financial planner has to ask a lot of questions, but you're asking questions about people's values and people's beliefs. And you talk about their dreams. You ask questions about what people's dreams are and what they want to achieve. And you work that into your planning with them.
I do. Yes. Yeah. And actually, that is another whole area of my life and my passion, which is about the questions we do and do not ask. And so I'm a big fan of Muhammad Yunus, who is the Nobel Peace Prize winner, who said, and I thought this was phenomenal, where he said, rather than asking if people are creditworthy, we need to ask if banks are people worthy. And his answer was no. And not that I'm slamming banks by any means, because the banks in Canada do some great work in the area of philanthropy and fundraising and all of that. It's the emphasis for me is more so on the questions that we ask and how we ask those questions. And I think that we've gotten to comfortable asking questions in a particular way, or lots of us have intake forms that that are the standard questions to kind of get at the numbers, if you will, and fewer questions about people's values. And I like to really expand that and delve into what's important to people.
Yeah, I mean, there's a talent in asking questions and actually hearing the things people say that, you know, aren't necessarily, you have to pick up on them, you have to listen to them and then go down that road a little bit and give people a space for them to talk. So then you discover these things that really gives you an insight into who they are.
And you're very good at that.
Really?
I don't know.
Sometimes I drift away. I mean, I'm with the fairies sometimes. Talk me through the process, because this is pretty new to me, and you know, coming from Ireland, where maybe this idea of legacy giving for a lot of people is still in the early days, and I would say around the world it's still an early process. Who are these people who are coming to you? These are generally privileged, wealthy people who have so much money they don't know what they're going to do with it?
No. As a matter of fact, it's the exact opposite. So I think there's a place to, because so I have these conversations with everybody, and sometimes they go somewhere and sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we're not having the conversations, how do we know if they can go somewhere or not? And I'm a big believer in that it's a process, right? Like that there's a whole process involved. So I know you and I've talked about this before, Simon, where people may have a certain way of looking at things when it comes to what they want to see happen with their estates. And generally people think in terms of, I'm going to leave everything to my family, which is great. And when I bring in the legacy piece, it gets people thinking about, are there other options available to me? And should I be thinking about other ways of doing this in, for example, where you can continue it on from generation to generation? Do you want to have your legacy impact, be a part of the impact that goes on after your death, for example, and beyond that, so that your kids and then your grandkids and their kids can make decisions about where they want to make the donations, which charities they want to support, and why they want to support them. So we have mechanisms. We have many different options and many different mechanisms in Canada where you can, you know, set things up in a particular way to make those kinds of things happen. And so some people, that's what they want to do. Other people, I had a conversation just this week with a woman who's writing an article about for higher net worth Canadians, and what they about the importance of estate planning and actually having a strategic philanthropic plan. She was telling her friend who was 70 that she was going to be writing this article, and the woman said, "Yeah, I find it so confusing. I'm not sure how much can I give now, how much can I give at my death?" And she's really looking for guidance around to answer that question. And so I am so passionate about the importance of having these conversations and asking the questions so that we can help guide people in this process. And not enough financial advisors are having these conversations.
Why do you think we don't have these conversations or talk about it more? Is it that we are putting off death to a little bit? You know, we don't want to go down that road and talk about it, or is it just too confusing and boring for a lot of people?
I think that's part of it. I think all of those are factors in this. I think that some people don't want to talk about their death, and I think then that we have to find ways to help people get there and make it more comfortable. And that's where, you know, sometimes people use humor, and I think that's a great idea, to use humor to whatever's going to work for people so that it's respectful and also engaging with them to have the conversation. And I go back to that sometimes I think the conversations aren't happening because, as I said earlier, for some financial advisors, it's kind of one-off, as opposed to I see it as a process. I'm a process junkie, right? Like I'm so caught up with process and knowing that things are, they take time, and you plant the seeds, and the next time you, and sometimes it just clicks with people. They go, I bring it up. I say, what about this? Recently, I had a client where her father died. They're settling her father's estate. She's furious with her father's financial advisor because her father was very charitable. He would have wanted to leave a legacy, and his financial advisor didn't have that conversation with him. So they're saying to me, we want to make a difference. Like, we want to take this inheritance, make a difference both now and in the future. And Betty Ann, we are counting on you to make sure that we figure this out so that that doesn't happen to them. So that's very inspiring. That's heartwarming when, you know, when I have that kind of experience.
Yeah, well, that gives you hope, doesn't it? That this idea that money coming to the next generation isn't just squirreled and spent on whatever, but actually generations are sharing that idea of giving, that that's something that's passed down and kind of magnified by the people below or the generations below.
And actually, Simon, on that note, it reminds me of another story where I was talking to a lawyer, an estate planning lawyer, and I showed her that I have this model. You know, it's a five-step process from an inheritance planning point of view that starts with, who was this person? What were their values? What was important to them? Do you want to infuse some of that meaning into the decisions you make about what you're going to do with your inheritance? She saw it as an opportunity. So she talks about when she's doing estate planning and putting together wills, that for some families, they're concerned about a child who may fritter the money away. And she said, boy, this model's great because she could use it to say to the parents, you know, we want the meaning around what you do with this money. And if you're not prepared to do that, you're not getting any money. And I thought, wow.
Yeah.
You know? So that's where the, you know, the two, like, I don't think anybody else is focusing on inheritance planning specifically, other than how do you want to invest this money?
Yeah.
And for me, it's more, let's look at the meaning behind the money and who this person was. And, you know, that opens up all kinds of interesting stories. And it's so touching. Like, this is what I love about the work I do.
I can imagine. I mean, you are obviously building relationships with these people. What is the thought process that they're going through? Are you seeing people who, I imagine, they've never thought about giving in this manner? You know, maybe it's a decision you only make once in your life. It's never even entered their mind. Do people just go behind it and want to give, or do they really have to mull it over and decide where that money's going to go? I mean, it must be quite a challenging thing, because you're already thinking about death, you know, whether it's of your parents or leaving your children behind. There's a lot to take in. Where are people's heads at when they're talking to you?
It really varies from person to person. And generally what I find is it takes some time for people to get their heads around it. Because they haven't been asked the question in the past about what do you want your legacy to be, or have you thought about what you want to have happen at your death? And I find that it takes several meetings, because then I send people away to do their own homework. Mm-hmm. And then we start refining more about what it is that they might like to do as part of their legacy. And, you know, for some people, it's our adult son who, when he was a teenager, he got in trouble with the law. He had some mental health challenges. If the service had been there for him, he wouldn't have gone down this path. So, you know what? We want to keep that from happening with teenagers in the future. And even people get more specific about the types of services that they want to support, you know, that they want it to be community-based, they want particular perspectives. So I encourage them to go and talk to the different charities and, you know, gather the information for themselves. And this is another really interesting piece that I've noted in the difference between my clients, the people I work with, and people in the fundraising and plan giving on the charity side. Uh-huh. In that, I have to convince my clients that they should reach out to the charities that they're leaving tens of thousands of dollars to, because they go, well, why? Like, and so they don't have that perspective, the perspective that I've learned through CAGP about that the charities want to know, like, who's leaving what in their will, and they want to hear the stories while that person's alive and why this is important to them. So I see additional gaps, if you will, between the world I work in and the world that charities work in. Mm. And I'm happy to say that I'm partnering with many charities so that we can start figuring out how can we address that gap. And I want some help from other people who've been on your podcast to talk to them as well. Because I think there's a whole, you know, we have to stop working in our silos, and we have to find, if we collaborate, the synergy will have such an impact.
I mean, I've seen some successful partnerships kind of develop between solicitors and people who are helping them build wills, solicitors and charities and fundraisers. And, you know, there's stats that go around that if a solicitor brings up this idea of leaving money to will, then the percentage of people who do leave money to will skyrockets.
Yes.
So, I mean, what are these people thinking with regards to the charity? You said they're about them not going and contacting them. Is it just kind of embarrassing, or is it, again, people don't really understand the process, and what is it?
I think it's the latter. I think they don't understand the process. And I only now understand the process because I've learned from the charities themselves, and I've heard the importance of the stories. And that has opened up so many doors for me to bring that information back to my clients, to share that with them. So they see the importance of that. And even the stories that I've heard from the charities, really compelling and touching stories, I've been able to bring those stories back to my clients and share those stories. And that gets people thinking, and it entices people, if you will, to really consider leaving a gift in their will, or, you know, looking at other options to magnify their gifts now, and so on.
This is a really random question, but do you ever find with your clients that they have no specific passion for a particular area of charity, or is it always very clear for them that, no, I would really like to help a leukemia charity, or I would really like to help an animal charity? Are people quite easily made up, or is anyone sitting on the fence?
I think that most people have something inside them that you just have to kind of help the seed grow, if you will. And the specific charities really varies from person to person. So I was talking to a retired principal. She's she has adult kids, and I was asking her about what made a difference in her life. And she said if it hadn't been for sports, she never would have ended up where she did and gotten the education and all of that. Well, sports, that's a pretty broad topic. So then it was, what charitable organization would she like to leave her money to, some of her money to? So she started doing some excavating, if you will, to finding out what charities have her values, her shared values. We have some different charities in Canada. I threw some of them out to her. She goes, no, I don't want to support them. So she had to go looking.
Yeah, interesting.
She had to go looking for the charities that were aligned with her values and what's important to her. And I find that with a lot of my clients, that especially in the mental health realm, and that's where it's helpful for me to know what's happening in my own community.
Yeah.
Because then I can provide some examples, and then they can go and talk to the charity themselves. So people really want to have an impact. I'm sure you have discovered that as well. And I'm the link, if you will, between a person's vision and how they want to make a difference and what's important to them with the charity and the impact that they could potentially have.
That's a real gift to be in that position and actually guide people through that, which seems to be why you're always smiling, Betty Ann. You obviously love your job.
It is. It's incredible. And, you know, in some ways, I feel as though I'm a pioneer. And there are other pioneers, other financial advisors whom I respect so much, because they're actually the ones who got me involved and opened up the doors so that I could learn more and so I could be more effective in this arena, in this area. And now I keep lapping it up because I love it so much, and there's so much to learn and so much to do.
Well, do people say, or when people say no or they're not interested, why are they saying that? I mean, you must get some conversations that kind of deflate you a bit, where people are like, oh, I don't want to give my money to charity. They're all scams. They're all wasting their money on CEOs. Surely there's people like that who just don't believe in charity.
It's rare. And there are some people who, after going through the process, they make a decision to not, you know, leave a legacy or incorporate that into their financial plan. And I have, for example, this client who, he's now retired. He had a great government job. And I said, so I hardly ever give up, Simon. And at the same time, I like to think I'm not pushy. I like to ask the questions and encourage, and, you know, and we'll say to people, if you want me to back off, that's fine. If you don't want to hear me talk about this anymore, then just let me know and I'll stop. And in his case, now that he's retired, I suggested that he volunteer with this one organization that I think that as a volunteer, he might reconsider. And so he is planning on being a volunteer. So when I do regular annual reviews with my clients, and I always revisit it, and when I meet new clients, I build it in right at the outset in terms of their current giving and do they want to talk about how they can magnify their gift and how do they want to incorporate it. So planting the seeds along the way throughout the entire process and then watering the seeds and seeing what grows.
Yeah, it's interesting to see them kind of you know, I suppose we all do it. We test charities. So if you're volunteering with one, if you make those smaller gifts, if you're even asking them a question, they're all tests, aren't they? And if we fail any of those tests, then we potentially lose a big legacy gift from these donors.
Exactly. And that's where, you know, I think that's where the conversations and the stewardship and the relationship on the side of the charity is so very important as well. And at the same time, and the sort of response that if I send somebody over here, what response they get and how they are treated.
You've got a lot of writing and you do a lot of talks, and there's only so much we can get through. I don't want to keep you. But what do you think, where do you think this is going? And where do you think, as a fundraiser, where do you think we should be in this process? What can we be doing better? How can we kind of capitalize on this? What's missing?
Yeah, I think one thing that is missing is that, and I think Jenny's the one who said this, you know, you have to be bold. And I think that, so I was talking to, she's a friend and a fundraiser, and she was saying to me that she comes up with this beautiful plan around with somebody who's going to be a donor, and they go back to their financial advisor and she doesn't hear from them again. And I think that fundraisers need to find the financial advisors whose hearts are in the right place and where it, at their core, they want to make a difference in the world. And I think that those relationships need to be established, built. And if fundraisers are talking to somebody and they say, I'm going back to my financial advisor to discuss this, to say, generally speaking, there's a good chance that your financial advisor may not agree with this. Have you thought about getting a second opinion? And getting another perspective on it. And we could have a whole other conversation about why financial advisors don't encourage people to give now and in the future. And so I think that's number one, that we need to, and I think we need to do more collaborative work together as the financial advisors who are doing philanthropy and the fundraisers and the plan givers, so that, because we know that we're in a great position to be able to encourage people to give now in the future. And the ideally, because I am a dreamer, I would love, you know, when I think about the regulators regulating my industry about investments being appropriate for people's time frame and risk level and all of that, I think that the regulators have a role to play. Not that I want to be heavy-handed. Mm-hmm. I think that there has to be some way to say to financial advisors, all financial advisors, that we have a fiduciary duty and responsibility to have these meaningful conversations with our clients, because then I think we could make a huge difference in the world. So, you know, ultimately, I would love to create a training program specifically for financial advisors and be able to say, you know, here's how you can do it. Here's what's involved. And
I mean, that would be amazing, because regulators aren't known for having a heart in any industry. But obviously, you know, the people who make these decisions and set these rules are human beings, and they have hearts. And so, I mean, it's an interesting one for you to tackle, and no better woman to tackle it, but to actually change this from the inside so that people are having more of these emotional, loving conversations about how they can have a positive impact in the world. That would be amazing to see.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't
good
that
luck
be
with
great?
That. It would. Betty, I'm not going to keep you any longer. If people want to find out more about you, and I would really recommend fundraisers tap into some of the stuff that you're writing and speak about, and even just reach out and talk to you, because you're a fascinating woman. Where can people find you?
Okay, so I, separate from the money world, wealth world that I work in, I have to have, speaking of the regulators, I have to have a separate website. So if you go to www.bettyanne.net, BETTYANNE.net, you can, you know, contact me through there. I'm on Twitter, so Betty Ann CFP, because I'm a certified financial planner. I'm on Facebook with a couple of different business pages. And I have the Making Dreams a Reality Financial Services Facebook page. I have my book, Making Your Dreams a Reality, business page. And I also have a group called Philanthropic Businesses. So I got tired of hearing people, certain group of people saying, oh, you know, businesses, all they care about is making money, and that's why they're tapping into the charitable giving
sector. You're talking about me? Are you referencing me?
No. Well, actually, you might have. So I have this page on Facebook, Philanthropic Businesses, and you can, and I do interviews with people to say, why is this important to you?
Wow.
And what are you doing? Because I think that it all builds, you know, the synergy builds, and I look forward to all the changes and all the difference we can make. So those are the ways that you can get in touch with me.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Even though I'm very cynical about businesses, I'm open to having my mind changed, and I'd love to see some of those interviews.
All right, you've given me a challenge, Simon.
Yeah, please do. please melt my heart.
Okay.
So, all right, I'll put a link to all of those in the podcast description as well so people can find those. But that's really, really interesting. And obviously, we could keep talking, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon, Betty-Ann. But I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us now. And good on you. Good on you. This is great.
My pleasure. It's been delightful, Simon. And I look forward to our more conversations with you. It's great.
Absolutely. You'll be back without a doubt.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't, whatever, you're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hello, this is Morgan Freeman. For discounts on Simon's best-selling online fundraising courses, go to www.changefundraising.com/training and use coupon code podcast. Complete them in your own time, wherever you want. Get busy living or get busy buying.